Everybody, it's Shelby with Chutzpahs and Crying, and it's Crafting Story Time, where I tell you a terrible story and crochet. If you like to listen to true crime and craft and crochet, or you just like true crime, let me be your girl. I tell terrible stories and get traumatized while I craft. You can find me on TikTok. I opened an Etsy shop under Snow Stitch and Snow Stitch. I have one thing there for now because I'm trying to slowly migrate things over. School starts up tomorrow for both my kids. And so, well, for both, more than two kids, for two of my kids. So it's been a little hectic. Came back from vacation. Work's been a mess. So I'm catching up. But can we just take a moment and appreciate my makeup? Because I know it's not like the way women do makeup now, like I'm nowhere near as advanced, but I haven't done eyeshadow like this in at least 7 years. I used to do makeup for for Estee Lauder. And yeah, so for someone who hasn't done it in 7 years, my hands are far less steady. I'm very proud of it. I did my hair, I bleached it, I did all of this myself, did my daughter's. She looks adorable too. So I'm actually feeling myself today. So give me a minute. That doesn't happen. I'm happy with this, not all this. Work in progress. We're going to be accountable and we're going to work toward it though. That's the goal. Now, I have a story for you that I was not too familiar with. And I mean, it's just really tragic. Our story takes place in this town. And I swear this town is so beautiful and it just looks so quaint. And it is called Hope Mills, and it's in North Carolina. It's not too far outside Fayetteville. Hope Mills is like a very family-friendly area, great to raise children in. It's quiet. Crime isn't, this ugly thing that's just around every corner. And it's picturesque. Like it looks like a nice little town, honestly. I need to go to North Carolina, obviously, because it's just so pretty. Here in Hope Mills, North Carolina, we have Danielle or Danny Locklear. And Danny is this 15-year-old kid. She's about to be 16. She's a beautiful young lady. She has this dark skin, but these piercing eyes, this very beautiful, enchanting smile. She seems like a lovely girl. And by all accounts, she was not like a troubled teen. She wasn't a troublemaker. She was a good student. And, she was just a good kid, a good, happy kid, which is what you want to see in your children, right? At the time that all of this takes place, Danielle's mom actually is not living in Hope Mills with her daughter. She's going through quite the divorce. So to get Danielle, it seems, to get her just out of the conflict and turmoil, she goes to Hope Mills to live with her grandparents. And she's very close with her grandparents. It seems that she's very respectful to her grandparents, doesn't cause them any grief or worry, which I think we can all appreciate. And in Hope Mills is also her sister's mom, her aunt. So she has a support system there as well. It's not like the grandparents are just left alone to raise a teenager. It's nothing like that. It is an all hands on deck. Everybody's helping out together situation. So on March 11th, 2014, Danielle tells her grandfather that she's actually going to go drop off a book at a friend's house, and then she's just going to come right back home. I feel like this speaks to the level of trust between her and her grandfather. Because when Danielle comes and tells him that she's going to go drop off this book, it's 10:30 at night. And like for me, mind you, she doesn't drive. She's going to be walking over there. For me, I have a 14-year-old, she's about to be 14. You're not walking your ass anywhere at 10:30. Go to bed. No. So I think this really speaks in the level of trust with her. Because her grandfather's just like, okay, I'll see you in a bit. He has no reason to worry. He has no concern because she's never done anything to make him worry and to make him really, come down hard on her. She's a good kid. But then an hour passes by and she has not come back home. Her grandfather becomes very concerned very quickly because he knows that's just not like her. She's not answering her phone. And, you know, this is 2011 when social media is really beginning to take off. She is a frequent poster on like Facebook, MySpace, as well as YouTube. This girl's, you know, constantly online. She has had no activity since she's left also. So this is also very concerning. So after, you know, these red flags, not coming home, not answering the phone, no social media activity, he calls the friend that she said that she was going to go to. And when her friend answers, she does not know what they're talking about. There was no book that she was expecting from Danny, and she hadn't seen her that evening at all. With this information, Danielle's aunt immediately calls her mother, Rona, and tells her, you need to get over here. Danielle's missing. And I'm honestly genuinely happy that the police didn't label her a runaway. They listened to the family and told them she's a good kid. This is nothing like her. She's never ran away before. She doesn't get in trouble. There have been no signs that something's wrong or that she's depressed or angry. There's been nothing of the sort. So this is clearly something is very wrong. They file their police report and the investigation takes off immediately. They just hit the ground running. Pretty quickly in this investigation, they learn that Danielle had actually skipped school that day, which was already surprising to hear because it wasn't like her. They're not used to Danielle doing anything like that. The friend that told them about her skipping was able to provide proof. Danielle had actually sent her a picture of where she was and where she was, what, where she was skipping at was, it wasn't like a boy's house or anything. So apparently, I guess on the, near the school, there's a creek. And it's not like a creepy creek or anything. It's actually, it's kind of pretty. And apparently it was kind of like a hangout for teenagers. And I had a spot like that. But, you know, we were just getting, you know, smoking a lot of weed. I don't know if that's what she was doing. But I'm sure there are some teenagers going there to do that. That's for sure. It's that kind of spot. Just a little hangout spot. Police are also provided surveillance from a neighboring house that shows a group of girls walking in the direction of the creek, and Danielle is following behind them. So we know for sure she walked there unbothered, came home. And again, when she came home, she wasn't withdrawn, she wasn't upset, she wasn't depressed. So there was nothing that gave any type of inclination that something happened while she skipped. Nothing like that either. So it's a little perplexing. The family goes and investigates the creek themselves. They know the police are working, but they just don't want to sit and wait. I'm sure that's far more torturous. So they go and do some work themselves. And what they find is very concerning and disheartening for them. They are walking up and down the creek, and there, you know, there's trash, there's remnants of just other activities going on, you know, teenage shit. But then they find Danielle's shirt, a towel, and the most telling article of clothing is a sock. Now, you hear a sock and you're just like, why is the sock so important? So apparently, this sock is, it's a pair that she only wore to bed. She didn't wear them with shoes, she didn't wear them out. Those are her bedtime cozy socks. And they find one in the creek, which means that night she didn't go to the friend's house. She returned back to the creek. But why? And for what? They tell the police immediately what their findings are. And this definitely kind of turns it into something else because at this point they don't know what happened. Maybe she's hurt. Who knows? But after finding this sock, they know that more than likely Danielle has been met with foul play. And so they begin to really kick it even into an even higher gear. The community begins getting involved and searching for Danielle, which I always love and I always appreciate. It's always such a beautiful thing. While this community is searching for Danielle, or just any other clues or evidence that could help in finding her, authorities go ahead and interview her boyfriend, Jamichael Malloy. Now, Jamichael is, like Danielle, he's older. You know, she's a sophomore. He's going to be graduating this year. And he's actually just as good of a student as her. He doesn't get in trouble. He, you know, grades, does very well, very well-mannered, very polite, and he's actually preparing to enlist in the Marines once he graduates. But as they're talking to him, Jamichael is showing no signs of nervousness, no signs of lying or, you know, trying to think on the fly for excuses, nothing. And when they ask him where he's been, he actually says that he was at home at his house with his friend Dominic Locke. Him and Dominic Locke were actually studying to take their ACTs that next morning. And when they speak to him, he confirms it. Like, yeah, we never left his house. He also tells police that recently, him and Danielle had broken up. Reason being, you know, it's March and a school is coming up. And he's going to be graduating and leaving for the Marines. He knows that it's just not a relationship that's going to be maintainable. Long distance is one thing, but she's not going to be out of high school for another 2 years. So he decides that it's best for them to just break it off now, remain friends, and that way it's a smoother transition for when he leaves. And even, you know, as a broken up couple, they did still have a lot of things in common with each other, because originally, these two were brought together by their faith. They met in church, and it started off as friends going to church together and, you know, I'm sure discussing the word, things like that. And it blossomed into something bigger and into a relationship. They were together for, I believe, 2 years until now, at this point, where it's not that he doesn't want to be with her. He knows. It's only logical that it's not going to work out. So police finish questioning him. Again, there is nothing telling them that he's involved or that he knows something, nothing. He seems genuinely concerned. He's very calm and he's assisting and searching for her, but he's not, you know, doing that stupid thing where they insert themselves into the investigation. He's doing nothing like that. That night, Jamichael had called, asked him if he wanted to come over because they were taking the ACTs that next day. Once Dominic got permission, he went over there and was there the rest of the evening into the next morning. You know, even though he's not showing any suspicious signs or like body language, police do the right thing. They make the right call and pull phone records to see if they really were at Jamichael's house. And they did. Jamichael's phone and Dominic's phone ping at the tower closest to his house. He was at home. Danielle's, on the other hand, was very confusing because Danielle's pinged, like, you know, a few miles, like a handful of miles, I should say, away from the Fayetteville airport. And they don't even understand how she would get there from the creek. Like, really, the only thing they know at this point with finding out her phone is somewhere like off the highway by that airport is she obviously didn't get there by herself. Someone took her there. Now, in the midst of this investigation, a rumor starts to go around about what happened to Danny. And the rumor is that this kid named Derek had, you know, told her how he feels and she rejected him. And so he snapped and stabbed her. And of course, they're going to go look into this because what the hell? Like, what a weird rumor. And it's definitely a lead. So they have to go ask him and talk to him. And the thing about this Derek kid is he just happens to live near where her phone pinged. So it's definitely something to look into and somebody to question. So, and Derek, it seems like him and Danny were probably from two different crowds. Danny seemed like, you know, more popular. Like I said, she's a good student. I'm sure she was probably punctual. She paid attention. She took things serious when she needed to. And Derek seemed more like the kid who didn't really give a shit what his grade was as long as he passed, and probably maybe didn't even give a shit if he passed at times. And he tells officers, like, no, he was not interested in her. He felt that she was a bit, like, you know, like a little snobby. And he also said, which I don't understand, but I feel like this speaks to, like, what activities Derek likes to do. Because he says that she seemed like a snitch. Like, well, what you up to, Derek, that she could snitch on you for? Like, that's a question for another time. But I was just very like, well, what are you doing? However, so Derek says, like, it's not him. He has no interest in her. Whatever is going around about him and her, not true. When police ask him where he was that night, he says that he was at home the whole night by himself looking for jobs online. There's nobody to corroborate that story, which is also very confusing because where the fuck are his parents? What do you mean nobody can say, yes, my son was home, like at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night? Like, I don't know. I'm like, where are your parents? But anyway, so nobody can corroborate his alibi. They do go ahead and search his property, and, you know, they really think they find something, right? Because they find a shovel with blood, and it's from killing wildlife. So that was a dud. It's not exactly that Derek has been cleared, but for the time being, they'll put him on the back burner and see what else they can find and what else comes up. Unfortunately, some time goes by since her disappearance in early March. But on April 2nd of that year, 2014, an officer is just driving, you know, on patrol, and he's crossing a bridge that has what they refer to as the South River under it. Everything kept saying the South River, so I have no idea if that is actually the river's name or if that's just how everybody refers to it. But the South River, that's what he's driving over. And he sees something in the water as he passes by, and it's kind of like, okay, and backs up to see what he's looking at. Because he's a little unsure, but all he can tell is it's something that definitely doesn't belong in the water. Like, you know, a foreign object, if you will. So he actually calls to see if there is an officer, maybe a little bit closer to the area from where he is. That way they can investigate and see exactly what is in this river. When police actually, you know, go into the water and retrieve what they found or what he saw, they find Danielle Locklear's body. It is her that he saw in the river. Not only is she just in the river, there is a cinder block, two cinder blocks tied to her. Her ankles are tied together with a cinder block there, and then there's another cinder block tied around her waist. So this isn't even a situation of maybe she accidentally drowned. No, somebody tried to hide her. But it is confirmed to be Danielle Locklear, the beautiful 15-year-old girl, just a baby. And of course, her family is just crushed. It isn't even just her family. The community is just totally heartbroken that something like this happened in their town. That's not something they're used to. That kind of crime is just really not something that really happens as often there. But police take a look at exactly where they're at, right? And what they realize is they are nowhere near Danielle's house, nor the creek, but they are 1 mile away from Jermichael's house. Up until this point, Jermichael had given them no reason to suspect him, none whatsoever. But with the proximity, now, you know, it's like, oh, you know, now we gotta talk to him again and press harder. Because it's just, I highly doubt when you're investigating homicides that coincidence is common. A search warrant is issued at Jermichael's house and property. You know, it's a country area, so it's like quite a bit of land. And they also give him a polygraph test when they bring him in for further questioning. The results from the search of Jermichael's property did come back with one thing, circumstantial, but still one thing. On that property, they found, it looks like it's kind of like behind a shed or something. They find cinder blocks, which it's like, okay, you know, a lot of people have cinder blocks out there, I'm sure. That's how it was where I grew up. But there is also yellow rope that is, like, at least visibly is identical to what they found wrapped around Danielle, you know, tethering her to the cinder blocks. Among this is, along with these findings, Jermichael failed the polygraph test. So with this information, they really push harder on him. But he really is just as cool and collected as he was the first time being questioned. He was completely unfazed. Again, no signs of nervousness or anxiety or trying to think of nothing like that. He was cool, calm, and collected, which is very eerie. And they really tell him, look, you failed the lie detector test. We found this information. Now, you tell me, who's going to believe you in court? Are they going to believe you? Are they going to believe that you failed the polygraph test? She's found by your house. And what was tied around her, we also found at your house. But I mean, this kid just doesn't budge at all. Because they have nothing solid to arrest him and hold him, they let him go back home. But they do keep his cell phone. That way they can go through that as well. And that's when they have their big breakthrough. What they find is he had used, I guess, some secondary text or messaging app when Jermichael had originally had his phone pinging off the towers by his house. It's because this secondary app was basically like scheduling messages to send back and forth for him. And that way it looked like he was texting at home, but he really wasn't home. When they try to talk to Dominic basically pleads the fifth and gets a lawyer immediately. Dominic knows he's fucked. When Jermichael comes in, he is singing a very, very different tune than what he was before. They immediately confront him about the phone and the secondary app that they found, as well as the activity that they saw on it. And he crumbles. And what he tells them is that Danielle had told him that she was pregnant. He was not happy about this. Now, Danielle wanted them to stay together for the baby, basically. And Jermichael was basically like, no, I don't want anything to do with you. I'll take care of the baby. You and I are fucking done. And that night that she met him in the creek, he had her meet him at the creek so she could take a pregnancy test in front of him. Which, girls, ladies, if you're in some situation, you know, with your boyfriend, ex, lover, anything, you know, anything romantically involved, and they're inviting you to a dark, isolated place in the middle of the night, in the middle of a conflict between you two, or really just not even conflict, just don't do it. Do not meet them. And if you are so compelled to do it anyway, please take someone with you. Multiples. Like you say it, right? And you're like, well, duh. But we all make mistakes and we all think we know somebody. And it's just, that's just not the case, right? You never know what somebody's capable of when they're desperate. He says while she's there at the creek with him that they begin to argue all over again and that she started to be mean again. Like, okay. And that's when he just started to strangle her. Now, while all this is happening, Dominic is just casually waiting in the car. Like, really? I don't know. I don't understand. Once Danielle is dead, Jermichael goes and, you know, fetches Dominic so he can help him load her into the truck while they're driving to where they want to dump her body. Or I think, actually, no. While they're driving back to Jermichael's house, they toss her phone just off the highway, which is why it was found in pinging, you know, closer to the airport, which is why everybody was so confused. They went back to Jermichael's, picked up the supplies, then went to the river, tied everything to her, and dumped her like she was nothing. Sad part is the autopsy came back that, you know, she was killed by strangulation. That was her cause of death. But she also was not pregnant. Which, it's already a senseless murder. But I feel like that just, it just really makes it so much worse because, like, it's, like, super senseless. Like, now you're just like, well, you fucked up your life too, fucking idiot. Like, that's just stupid. Now, Jermichael goes ahead and pleads guilty to second-degree murder, which I do not agree with. I feel like a lot of people wouldn't agree with that. I definitely think this was premeditated. Why the fuck was Dominic just lurking in the car in the middle of the night? Just waiting. That's weird. Why did you have the secondary text app on your phone already? It's not like he went back home after killing her, downloaded it, and then scheduled it really quick. Like, no, that thing was going while he was meeting her. So I don't agree with the second degree at all. But he pleads guilty to second degree murder and is sentenced to 25 to 31 years in prison. Dominic Locke pleads guilty to murder after the fact and is sentenced to 6 to 8 years in prison, which I also do not agree with. I think he should have been in there longer because we know he sat there and heard everything and did nothing. He was in a car, meaning he could have driven off himself to go get help. He did none of it. Instead, he assisted in not only loading the body, but preparing for disposal and then throwing her into the river. I think he needed more like 12 to 15, 10 to 15. I don't know. I just don't think 6 to 8 years is enough. I hope he did the whole fucking 8 because no. Just know what makes this even grosser about Jermichael Malloy is, I mean, he just played in her family's face the whole time. He's over here acting like the concerned boyfriend, helping search, being supportive. When all along he knows what she's like, he knows what she is. To make this even worse, like, this was all on impulse. Not the act itself, but the choice that to commit the act was on impulse. He had no confirmation that she was pregnant. There wasn't a doctor's appointment or anything that had taken place. All he saw was how it would affect his future and decided that he needed to get her out of the way. That was what is so gross about this fucking kid. It's disgusting. Now, I can't blame the parents in this one. I really can't, because good student, good grades, everything. Parents apparently were very involved, strict, kept their eye on him. I think sometimes, even though you raise your kids as best as you can and try to teach them to be good people and have good morals, sometimes you just can't, you can't take the selfishness out of them. I think there's some innate characteristics that, as much as you try, you just can't completely rid of or break down. Maybe they can conceal it from you until it's there, in this case, like Jermichael. But that is the murder of Danielle Locklear. So what can we learn from this, right? Remember, Danielle was not pregnant, but we don't know why she thought she was, or why she said she was. We don't know if this is a situation where she lied to try to keep him from breaking up with her. Or is this just where, you know, if you're a woman, you know, fucking cycles change at the drop of a hat. It's so easy for something to kind of tip the scale and make it different. We don't know if that's what made her think she was pregnant, because maybe she was a little late and she thought it was, you know, something more serious, pregnancy, and really just an off cycle. But let's say, we're going to play devil's advocate here. I am not victim blaming. I knew a lot of girls in high school who would get dumped by their boyfriend. And usually they would do this because he was already seeing someone else. And they would tell people that they were pregnant, or they would tell him that he was pregnant. She wasn't pregnant. But it's just a last-ditch effort to get his attention, to get him to talk to her, and maybe even get him back with her. Again, I am not saying that this is what Danielle did, but this behavior is common in teenagers and young girls, and even in adult women. We hear about adult women trapping men too, or trying to, lying about it. You had that fucking maternal instinct shit that just happened, or that, you know, everybody just watched. Where that crazy bitch fucking lied about a pregnancy to keep the guy. And the sad thing is, that man really didn't have anything to offer. Money, nothing. And I don't mean that as an insult to him. This girl was desperate for love and attention and family that much. And she faked a pregnancy. And she carried the shit out. I think we really need to understand the seriousness and severity of acts like that. I really do, because it turns into just, you know, at first it's just like a little like, you know, teenager being stupid, desperate, you know. But I do think that behavior from those who are doing it on purpose, again, not Danielle Locke, devil's advocate, I think it can turn into something far more serious if you look out for them, or if someone doesn't call them on their shit, basically. Even if she did lie, she didn't deserve to fucking die. She did not. And we all do dumb shit with that pure puppy love at 15. People say puppy love is so stupid, blah, blah, blah. It's like the best love you're ever going to get. Or at least not necessarily the best. But it's kind of the most pure, because life hasn't really hit you. I mean, everybody goes through things. I know that. Everybody has a different situation. But responsibility, debt, divorce, child support, foreclosure, a mortgage, none of that has happened to you yet. You have no big major adult responsibilities. So you get to love freely, with the only, you know, stressors being your surroundings and your own actions and their actions. That girl did not deserve to die. She really didn't. But I don't, I mean, everybody we cover in these, right? They don't deserve to die at all. But there's someone who's always selfish or impulsive or angry or vengeful over the dumbest fucking things. It's just, the human mind is crazy. And you really don't know who someone really is or what they're willing to do to get what they want. And in this case, Jermichael wanted his Marine future. And if there was going to be a baby on the way, because let's not forget, this fucker thought she was pregnant when he fucking killed her, which means he, like, it would have been his baby. And he was like, that can go too. What the hell's wrong with you? Fucking ew. All right, remember that. Technically, he was willing to take two lives to save himself. And now look where he is. And that is the story of Danielle Locklear. I am about 3/4 of the way done with this. It's going to be a bag. Then I got to do the straps, which I think are going to go like here. And probably about here to like, best thing about them though, I can put my little yarn balls in here and my crochet hook in them now. That way everything stays together until I get to work on it more. But I thank you for joining me today. Don't forget, I'm on TikTok and YouTube, sometimes Facebook, Instagram, at Hooks, Books, and Crime. I'm Shelby, and I'll catch you on the next one. And please remember, evil looks just like us. Okay, bye.